Welcome to Self Work. I'm Dr. Margaret. We're going to talk about managing your emotions today. But first, let's hear a word from our sponsors. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you are definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormonal changes our bodies go through, perimenopause, menopause. And while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. Certainly, perimenopause especially threw me for a loop far before I was expecting it. The good news is that we don't have to suffer through any of it anymore because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. In fact, Hormone Harmony has become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. That's 50 orders in the time it takes you to listen to Self Work. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off your first order today. Are you tired of waking up feeling sore and stiff in the morning? Or maybe the words bone on bone are all too familiar? If you're middle-aged, chances are it has to do with the fact that your body isn't making as much of one specific type of protein as it used to. Dr. Chad Walding, a renowned doctor of physical therapy, says the overwhelming conversation he has with patients struggling with bone and joint issues has to do with this specific protein deficiency. The good news? Simply adding it back into your diet is scientifically backed to support bone density, soothe joint discomfort, and boost mobility. Plus, it's the most abundant protein in the body. So not only does it reinvigorate the body with denser bone health, but studies have shown dramatic improvements in hair, skin, nails, and digestion. Get the full story free of charge by visiting getnativepath.com/selfwork. That website again is getnativepath.com/selfwork. That is getnativepath.com/selfwork. Do you wish you had a healthier diet? Let's be real. Eating healthy can be a hassle. There's shopping and meal prep, and especially if you're trying to manage depression or anxiety, what if there was an easier way and a way for you to be assured you're taking care of your family? Meet Sunbasket, a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens, literally dozens, of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. I discovered Sunbasket during the pandemic, and was that ever a game changer? Their meal kits are quick and easy, even if you're not a pro in the kitchen. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitment to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very best. So go to sunbasket.com/selfwork today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/selfwork to save $120 across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. This is Self Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. That can be part of grief, where you can only handle so much pain at one time. So you allow reality in one small bit at a time. And I get that. That's human. That's normal. But staying in denial isn't managing emotions. It's trying to stave them off. But acceptance isn't resignation. You accept something and then you work on it. Welcome to this week's edition of Self Work. Today we're going to talk about how to manage your emotions. Sometimes you might feel as though you can't feel anything. Other times that you feel too much all the time, and your emotions are the main thing that's leading you to the choices you're making, that you're stuck in a feeling, or you're portraying an emotion to others that perhaps you don't recognize or mean to, usually a case of how you're saying something rather than what you're saying. So I found the work of Eric Barker, a best-selling author, his last book being Plays Well with Others, which was released in 2022. We're going to talk about the 4 R's rule for emotional intelligence. Our listener voicemail is from a young woman who's around 20 who says she lives in an ethnic household. And after reading an article I wrote about borderline personality disorder, that she sees her mother as suffering with BPD. I'll include the article in the show notes so that you can read it as well. You might just find yourself in the same boat as this young woman. Before we go on, let's hear from BetterHelp. The most common problem I hear from those seeking therapy is how hard it is to find a therapist, how long it takes, how vulnerable you feel asking around for names. BetterHelp solves those problems. After you make the first contact, their standard is to offer names of therapists to you in less than 2 days, and you can talk to them in a first session to see if it's a good fit. If so, you're on your way. But if not, rather than going through something awkward, you simply let BetterHelp know, and they'll ask what it was you didn't like and find someone else for you. You can text, chat, or talk virtually. All of those avenues are open to you. I'm a therapist because I got good therapy. I'd had no idea how much I could benefit from it, but I knew I wasn't seeing myself or my world clearly. Here's BetterHelp's offer for self-work listeners. 10% off your first month of sessions if you use this link, betterhelp.com/self-work. They say the best time to plant a tree is 30 years ago, but the next best is today. It's never too late to reach out and get help. BetterHelp.com/self-work. Let's start by defining what emotional intelligence is. This definition is from the Harvard Business Review Guide. From a scientific standpoint, emotional intelligence is the ability to accurately perceive your own and others' emotions, to understand the signals that emotions send about relationships, and to manage your own and others' emotions. Now, there's debate whether emotional intelligence is even a real thing. But if you're interested to see how you might rank on the spectrum of emotional intelligence, the internet has all kinds of free tests where you'll receive a score on how high your EQ or your emotional quotient is. In your show notes, you'll see the one that's from Psychology Today, and it's free. So take it if you like. But I'm not sure these tests are really valid. Just take them for fun. But what I do know is that there are lots of us who have great trouble managing our emotions. I find myself saying a lot to my own clients, managing your emotions, or what's termed emotional regulation by psychologists, managing your emotions doesn't equate with emotional shutdown. You're not managing a feeling by not feeling it. You may be managing that moment, meaning that if it's not appropriate or possible to feel an emotion right at the moment, then you can push it aside. For that moment, compartmentalize it, which is again a psychology term. Put it in a box. Put the box somewhere in your mind, figuratively, of course, but then come back to it when you have time, when you have the energy. That's emotion management for sure. But today I want to focus on 4 steps in the management of emotions that goes more into detail than simple compartmentalization. Now, these 4 steps are the brainchild of Eric Barker, who I mentioned in the intro. He calls it following the 4 rules of emotional regulation or management. These steps in order are realize, recognize, refine, and regulate. Kind of catchy for sure. But as I read about them, they make a lot of sense and their order also makes sense. Then we'll also go over some techniques to use, some hacks to use on how to weave your thinking self into your feeling self so that your response to what happens in life doesn't create chaos, but has a chance to create stability. The first step is realize. This means self-awareness, having a deep and clear understanding of one's emotions, strengths, weaknesses, needs, and drives. Let me go over that list again. Your emotions, your strengths, your weaknesses, your needs, and your drives. Developing this ability also can help you to recognize how your feelings affect you and others. Although introspection may seem the best way to do so, ironically, you could get self-awareness from other people's feedback and reactions to you. Okay, so what does it mean to have a deep and clear understanding of your emotions? Those words are going to mean different things to different people. But what I think he means by realization is that you've done or do every day a pretty thorough evaluation of yourself. I'm always amazed when I ask someone, so what are your strengths? And the person looks at me blankly. By the way, they can name a lot of weaknesses usually. Or I could ask you, what drives you to do what you do? What are some needs you have? Maybe some needs you feel are healthy, but then some needs that you struggle with. What emotion do you feel more easily or more regularly than others? That might be, I get mad easily a lot, or I get afraid a lot. So again, you think about your strengths, your weaknesses, your needs, your drives, and your emotions. And you might want to write down some of the answers to those questions. What do I think my needs are? What do I think my strengths are and my weaknesses? And what drives me? Here's the second step. Recognize and label. In order to recognize how you feel, you need to check in with yourself often. He says, be specific, label the emotion, name it to tame it. What he means by that is when you label an emotion, you're more able to work through it. Also, more often, you'll be able to recognize it because, oh, there's my jealousy. Oh, whatever it happens to be. So you're living your day. You've done your assessment of your emotions, your strengths, your weaknesses, your values, and your needs. But as you're living your day, how often do you check in with yourself about what you're feeling? Now, many of you are probably saying to yourself, that is ridiculous. I'm a nurse, or I'm a lawyer, I'm a plumber, I'm in school. I don't have time to label my feelings all the time. Believe me, I get that. But I think the major point here is not to constantly check in, but to do it enough so that you have an idea of what emotion you may be trying to manage. You might believe that you're angry, but when you stop and think about it, for example, you're both angry and disappointed. Or that you're far less angry than you are disappointed. Here's a pretty common sense analogy. It's like when you're doing the laundry, okay? So you want to do the laundry the most effectively, right? So you have to know what you're washing and drying. Sheets, towels, t-shirts, and jeans. All of those do best, or at least this is what the makers of the washers and dryers tell us, when they're washed and dried on a different setting. Now, not everyone has those settings, so they don't make that distinction, or they can't. But that's the point. What's the most effective way of doing your laundry? Or what's the most effective way of handling anger versus handling or managing disappointment? Because they're different. So you want to know what you're feeling so that you can manage it as effectively as you know how. Here's Mr. Barker's third point, refine. Now, he uses a term here that's, I don't know how I feel about it. He says we need to develop emotional granularity. What does that mean? A researcher named Lisa Feldman came up with this term. What she'd say is you want to have as many words for emotions as you can because you want to have layers of understanding of what different emotions might come up for you. The deeper or longer the list, the better. You want to distinguish emotions from each other, even as subtly as you can, to find better ways to cope with or to amplify them. Let's go back to our washer-dryer example, which you're probably tired of, but let's go back to it. Let's say I figure out I'm angry. What are the shades of anger that I might feel? Like maybe you have blue jeans and you need to wash them and dry them, but they're new and kind of stiff, so you want to add softener to the water. But then you also have your favorite blue t-shirt that can't go in the dryer anymore because it's too fragile. So you may want to wash it on a gentle cycle, right? Okay, these are kind of silly, I know. But they're both blue pieces of clothing, just like you can just have, oh yeah, I'm angry. But blue doesn't describe them distinctly enough to help you choose how to handle them. And sometimes emotions are the same way. So you want to more carefully distinguish one feeling from another that might be akin to it. Let's use a real life example. Let's say I feel very hurt because my partner had an affair and I'm very angry and sad. But there's another very common, maybe not as obvious emotion that many people have. Again, we're looking for the shades of the emotion. And that shade is that you feel replaced, like you don't matter, like somehow you weren't enough. So that's self-doubt, self-loathing, even insecurity. So you can see, you can call it hurt, but if you call it, now I'm thrust into self-doubt and self-loathing, or if you just settle for only I'm hurt or I'm angry, you could miss a boatload of other emotions that you could be having. I find that often therapy revolves around this step because people are stuck in one emotion or another, and they struggle to realize that there are so many others that they could feel and manage and that would be helpful. So someone else's perspective can be very helpful here. In fact, in all of these steps, another perspective, whether that be a therapist, a friend, a trusted friend, another perspective can be very useful. You can even ask a friend, so what's the feeling that you see me having most of the time? The answer might surprise you and give you something to think about. So let's take a break and we'll be back in just a moment. As a psychologist, I've talked to many people with OCD about their experiences. The idea that OCD is only about hand washing and organization is a misconception. OCD is a severe and very common condition. OCD can latch onto anything, but it often focuses on the things we care about most. In an attempt to make the distress from their unwanted thoughts go away, people with OCD will often engage in repetitive physical or mental behaviors known as compulsions, which can be incredibly time-consuming and exhausting. Yet OCD is highly treatable, but it needs specialized treatment. NoCD is a virtual therapy provider for OCD that makes getting specialized therapy easier than ever. With NoCD, you can do live, face-to-face video therapy with licensed therapists who specialize in OCD. Therapists receive in-depth specialized training in exposure and response prevention, or ERP, a type of therapy that was designed specifically to treat OCD. NoCD accepts many major insurance plans and offers always-on support between sessions. If you think you might be struggling with OCD and want to learn more about therapy with NoCD, go to NoCD.com and schedule a free 15-minute call with their team. That's NoCD.com to learn more and book a free 15-minute call. Now, here's the fourth step. He says to reframe to regulate. Emotions are concepts formed by the interpretation of your personal experience. Let me say that again. Emotions are concepts formed by the interpretation of your personal experience. And by definition, they are not correct or right or wrong because they're based on perception and interpretation. Emotional responses are often the result of the story you're telling yourself about what just happened. Someone darts out in front of you in the street, you almost hit them and you get really mad until you realize that their elderly mom has fallen on the other side of the road and they're trying to get to her. Your emotion changes. Maybe you're a little irritated, but you're not as blaming or even punitive. So you can ask yourself this question. What else could be going on here? Question the way you're feeling and realize the way you feel is not a fact. It's simply an emotion. Here's an example from my own life. I had a lot of shame after my second divorce. Why had I married someone who'd been so emotionally controlling and abusive? Until one day, when we were doing what's called a family genogram during my training at Southwest Family Institute, so I was a graduate student. It's like making your own family tree, and you put in where the strong alliances between people were when there was conflict. You can trace all kinds of patterns. What the leader of the group noticed immediately from my own genogram was how very close, how too close, my mother and myself were. And she said to me, I'll never forget these words. So it seems to make sense that you chose someone as a partner who could match or even have a stronger influence on you than your mom so that you could leave her. Tears came to my eyes. I never looked at it that way, which was obviously a much more compassionate way to look at myself. I had never, ever thought of that. And I obviously still remember it. She had given me a gift. It's called reframing in psychology because a picture can look far different when it's reframed, right? Let's go over the four steps again. Realize, recognize, refine, and regulate, or I think a better word is reframe. What are some other ways that you can manage your emotions? These I found in another article, which I will have the link to in your show notes. There's mindfulness. Mindfulness can certainly help with tolerating distress. It can reduce impulsivity and it can help you accept reality. This is the skill to be able not to go down the rabbit hole and begin sweating what's going to happen in the next moment or hour or day or month, or you're just sure it is. But that is a rabbit hole you're going down, a negative spiral. All you have control over is right now. In fact, try mindfulness right now. Where are your feet right now? Are your shoes tight? If you're barefoot, what's underneath your feet? Are your feet cold or hot, sweaty or dry? Turning your attention to your feet in this moment can help you be mindful. And mindfulness can then help you manage emotions. There's also something called cognitive reappraisal. That's, again, like the reframing. It involves reframing negative thoughts to reduce the intensity of emotions. So you reappraise what you're feeling and say, wait a minute, could I feel about this another way? And actually, when you practice reframing and reappraisal, you can get really good at it. And of course, what we want to do is reframe it more positively. Now, that doesn't mean that you deny when something's bad or hurtful or painful. You can't reframe everything. But if you reframe some of the time, if you try to see, wait a minute, is there a way I need to be grateful for this? Or is there something good in this? My dad used to call me and say, Margaret, how's your practice going? And I'd say, Dad, you know, it's really going pretty well, knock on wood. And he'd laugh, and he meant this very lovingly. But he'd say, you know, you've screwed up your own life so much that it's probably really good for you now because you can understand a bunch of problems people have. Talk about a reframe, right? Goodness, but he was right. The next hack or thing you can try is what's called radical acceptance. What is that? It's a term that describes a way of being that you acknowledge the reality of what is happening rather than fighting it. You don't want to fight it emotionally because you actually cause yourself and perhaps even others more suffering. Do you have someone in your family who just denies that something really bad has happened? Maybe you deny alcoholism in your family, or you deny even that you're estranged from a family member and you somehow make that their fault instead of realizing I'm not picking up the phone and calling them either. You know, you accept reality, the reality of your own choices and other people's. I very much like a Carl Rogers quote. He says, the curious paradox is that when I accept myself just as I am, then I can change. And radical acceptance takes that idea even further, that accepting what happens in your life also brings a much greater ability to cope rationally with it. For example, I just said you might be estranged from a family member and you say, well, he hadn't called me in 20 years. Well, have you called him? He wouldn't answer if I did. Do you want to find out? Again, you accept reality, but then it frees you up when you say, wait a minute, I'm a part of this problem. And then you can do something about it, or at least try. Another part of radical acceptance is you may have heard somebody say, I can't believe this is happening. I don't want to believe this is happening. Well, it is happening, or it has happened. And keeping yourself in denial or not wanting to believe it isn't going to help most of the time. Now, that can be a part of grief, where you can only handle so much pain at one time. So you allow reality in one small bit at a time. And I get that. That's human. That's normal. But staying in denial isn't managing emotions. It's trying to stave them off. Again, if it's in response to overwhelming circumstances, then take it slowly. But acceptance isn't resignation. You accept something, and then you work on it. Deep breathing is another technique, another hack. When you do deep breathing, you want to make sure that you're not holding yourself tightly, but truly allowing your breath to go in and out, holding in the middle gently. Try this. Take a breath through your nose as you count to 5 or 7, then gently hold for 3 seconds, and then let that breath out through your mouth like you're blowing out a candle. Do this several times in a row, and you'll calm down. It'll help you become more stable. And then the last hack is sensory grounding. Now, what is that? It's where you focus on what you smell, what you taste, what you hear, what you see, what you're touching or is touching you. You simply check into your senses. It's a mindfulness technique, for sure, but it's very specific. I've used this technique often in my office when I have a client who is actively dissociating, usually caused by intense feelings or memories of trauma, or feels themselves drifting away from what they're conscious of in the room. I'll have them focus on an object on the table, pick it up, describe it to me, look at me and tell me who I am, what day is it, that kind of thing. Sensory grounding is when you use all of the senses to center yourself, and you can do it for yourself. All of these techniques slow emotional responding down. The very simple verbal cue you can use for yourself is this: respond, don't react. Responding involves slowing down as much as you can so that your own choices don't fuel whatever emotional fire is brewing. That's what reaction will do. It will tend to cause an escalation either internally for you, where you become more and more emotional, or between you and someone else, where the conflict or whatever is emotional can grow so out of hand that chaos is created. And chaos is not what you want to create.
SpeakPipe message from Dr. Margaret Rutherford.com.
Let's hear from our SpeakPipe voicemail for today.
Hello. So I'm a university student. I'm 20 years old. And I have been living for 1 year abroad at uni. So it's been 1 year when I've been apart from my parents. So it has taught me a lot and made me realize a lot of stuff. So for context, I live in an ethnic household and I realized I have developed an anxious attachment style with my parents. So I felt like I'm walking on eggshells with them, especially with my mom, because it's kind of scary how her mood changes like drastically. Like, I don't trust her. Like, suddenly she may be very, very happy, and I'm very scared when she gets those, like, when she gets so happy, it's very scary. So yeah, so every time I don't really trust her at all. My issue is that I think she may have bipolar personality disorder. So I was reading this article that you wrote about, and it perfectly described my mother, because I felt like she is exactly like that. So she may be happy, and then suddenly one thing can make her change her mood entirely, and I'm like, what the heck is going on? And yeah, so I don't trust her. I feel like I'm living in an unstable life, and I have this resentment towards her, but I can never act on it because, like I said, I have anxious attachment style. So I may think that, oh, maybe today she's going to be good and it's going to stay like that. But no, she goes back to being like that, a little bit like a bad person. And then there's my dad. So my dad, for context, he was a soldier. He has been a soldier. He worked in the army. He fought. So I think that gives him enough trauma from what he went through. But I still feel like I live with an unstable and dysfunctional family.
This young woman seemed to be almost whispering as she recounted some of the things she'd realized when she got away from her mother and father and sisters. I couldn't play all of her tape because it was fairly long. But at the end, she asked me, so how do I make boundaries that will work? She also said bipolar personality disorder. So I'm not sure if she's referring to borderline personality disorder or bipolar disorder, both of which can look and seem very much alike. However, there are some distinct differences, which could be a topic for another entire self-work episode. But I imagine she's talking about borderline personality disorder, which is a very painful way to live, I want to say first. People with BPD are often miserable. They lack the ability to do just what we've been talking about today, manage their emotions. For example, let's say you want to set a boundary with someone with BPD. Let's say something as simple as, I'm going to call home once a week. Now, if that's not okay with a person with BPD, it's likely to be perceived as complete rejection and or abandonment. Borderlines are stereotypically reactionary, non-empathic, impulsive. They emotionally travel all over the spectrum from way up to way down, and they can have little to no insight into how their own behavior is impacting others. Now, often, somewhat contradictorily, in environments that are structured, where roles are highly defined, they can seem very healthy and normal. On the outside, they seem loving and giving. It's when the relationships they seek are more intimate ones, where there's more ambiguity, where they're not in complete control, that they can easily deteriorate. An example comes to mind immediately. A woman I saw for years had a highly responsible job at our local university, but at night she would be up till 3 a.m., highly emotional and trying to manage her anxiety by cleaning obsessively. Now, these people are either super moms or horrific moms and can be both on the same day. So it's very confusing to children. No wonder this young woman says she has an anxious, avoided attachment to her mom. I bet she does. What I'd suggest for this listener is to read and educate herself as much as she can about borderline and realize the major way to draw those boundaries is to develop a very non-emotional response to her mother's attempted manipulation. There are many books on this topic, and what I've done is I've included the Goodreads link for several of them in the show notes. Many of those that are listed I've read myself and are very, very good. Some are newer and I have not. But education would be the best way to handle this because there is a lot to learn. And again, having borderline personality disorder is really tough. But often people with borderline can use up the people around them with just their intensity and neediness. It's a tough situation. So she needs to educate herself and manage her own emotions. She may need to grieve that her mother and father both may not have much capacity to create a sense of safety for her and her sisters. Good luck to you and to all of you who might be in this situation. Thanks so much for listening today to Self Work. As these listeners did, you can leave me a SpeakPipe voicemail. I love to hear your own words saying to me what you want to say or want to ask. Or obviously, you can email me at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com. Don't forget, and I forget to mention this a lot, we have some merchandise. I've got some merch, some self-work merch, and I'm going to put the Zazzles link in the show notes so that you can look around the store and see if there's anything. We've got mugs. We've got these really cool larger mugs, like that you might keep a big thing of hot coffee in or something like that, rather than an actual cup. We've got a tote. We've got all kinds of things. So we'd love for you to sell self-work a little out there in the market. Thanks so much if you do. As always, thank you for being here. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.